without having to go through quite as much detail. So remember what we did. We said that we had a secular Hamiltonian for the NV. Remember that we'd write this down saying that the electron spin is what's giving all the energies. So the nuclear spin, we just tack on, but the electron spin is what's determining everything. And so the first piece is a zero field splitting, and then there's a Zeeman interaction of the electron spin. There's a hyperfine interaction, and we're going to keep only the SZ portion of the hyperfine because the electron spin, it has to commute here. And then there's a nuclear spin term. And if there are multiple nuclear spins, I should sum over that, but we won't worry about that right now. Of course, this sum is just over the elements of that tensor, right? And then there's a dipolar term. And now I really do have to sum over J not equal to K. So that's a nuclear-nuclear dipolar term. In fact, it won't be important for anything we do. So that's a secular piece, and basically it's this piece right here that's defining all the physics. And then we said that we could introduce a non-secular piece. We're going to pick up all the non-secular parts, again, of the electron interaction. So that is basically the other pieces of the Zeeman interaction of the electron spin plus the other pieces of the hyperfine interaction. And what we're looking for is to understand the physics. Remember that we drew over here the energy levels. So we started off saying that we had the zero field splitting, delta. We kept adding these interactions to this. There was the electron-Zeeman interaction. And so we see a splitting of twice the electron-Zeeman energy. And there's the hyperfine interaction. So that now then we need to split these in terms of the nuclear states. And let's do that. So if we add in the hyperfine interactions, sigma z, a sub k, sigma sub k. Well, of course, here, we're in the MS equals zero manifold. And we'll do this for just one nuclear spin, one spin, one half. And so now that we have a degeneracy here of the nuclear spin plus or minus one half, right? But the hyperfine doesn't split those. But of course, it does split these. And so we label these in terms of the MS quantum numbers. And so the hyperfine interaction is going to split these things. It might be nice to get the directions right. Actually, it doesn't make any bloody difference. We'll just split them evenly. Right, but the labeling is going to be different because if I have minus in minus, right, then that'll be up. So this will be the minus 1/2, this will be the plus 1/2, and this will be the minus 1/2, and the plus 1/2 energy levels for those. Okay, so now that we have a splitting here, which is a hyperfine. And then finally, we could add the nuclear Zeeman term, right? That would split these two. But it's so incredibly small. And of course, it would shift these things, right? But so incredibly small. I want to effectively forget about it for now. We can come back to it in a second. Okay? So now we go and say, let's look at the effect of these terms on the energy levels here. And remember, this piece can be large, right? And this can be very large. So even though it's non-secular, because it's very large, it can add big shifts. And the place where we're going to care most about it is right here. Because compared to zero, everything's going to look big, right? And so we have the first order perturbation theory, which is always going to look like things that are in non-secular M in, divided by delta E. That's first order. We saw that these things are always going to be zero. They're always going to be zero because S sub z doesn't appear in here. So we're always going to see raising and lowering effects. So we're looking at the second order. So, and these will not be zero, but you can see what's going to happen, that N and M have better correspond to one quantum state, right? That they better be zero going to plus one or zero going to minus one. There'll be no contributions from the cross term plus one, minus one, right? Because we only ever have one raising operator in that term. Okay. All right. So we decided that there were four terms. There was the Zeeman-Zeeman term, the hyperfine-hyperfine term for identical nuclei, the cross term Zeeman-hyperfine. And then there's another hyperfine term between distinct nuclear spins. Okay. And we started writing out the term for the Zeeman-Zeeman term. And we saw that the second order shift of the energy for the MS equal 1, so this is 1 to 0 to 0 to 1 piece, that this term looked like 1/2 gamma divided by delta bx squared plus by squared. And it was just a little bit of algebra. There's nothing tricky about sticking in the Hamiltonian and going through and calculating the inner product. So I'm not going to look at these in gory detail through the algebra, because it'll take too long, and you've seen algebra before. So here we have a term that's minus gamma over delta, the same coefficient. And finally, the minus one subset looks just like the plus one. And all of those gammas better be squared. Okay, so now then, when we add these up, the way I want you to think about this is we've calculated what happens in the MS equals one manifold. So this thing corresponds to being multiplied by the projector 100, right? And correspondingly, we have those other projectors, right? Because I need to go ahead and put the electron spin back in here. You see, there's no electron spin state. There's just an energy. What I want to do is to show this as a Hamiltonian, OK? So we've got these particular projectors. And let me remind you of the S equals 1 spin operators. So we have SC squared, which looks like that. The identity, like so. And SZ, like so. Right? So when we add these up, I'm going to take a minus 2. Right? And so we've got plus 1, minus 2, plus 1 for those three projectors. Right? The rest of this is all the same. And so we end up wanting to look at a spin state, a spin operator of this form. Right? And it's easy enough to show that this is 3SC squared minus twice the identity. Yeah. So now that I know what the correction to the Hamiltonian is, right? There's the spin operator, and the term in front of it is that. Good. Now you can see what this is going to do. At this level of the second order level of approximation, for the Zeeman contribution to the Hamiltonian, right? This is the second order perturbation of the electron-Zeeman interaction. The nuclear spin dependence drops out, right? And so this is only an electron term, okay? And the only thing we see for this is that this state gets pushed down in energy, and it gets pushed down in an energy by level twice omega p, where omega p is equal to gamma e squared over delta bx squared plus by squared. And each of these gets pushed up in energy. by an amount of omega p. And so we get a shift of the energy. But in fact, we can't tell it from delta. It appears with exactly the same symmetry as delta. So having gone through all that math, it's in fact a boring effect. But it shows us the algebra that we need to go through in order to do this. Now let's also look and see how big. Remember if I look at these things, the way I like to think about this is that this is equal to gamma E times some field in the perpendicular direction divided by delta times gamma E of that field in the perpendicular direction. The reason I like it like this is this, that's the effective Hamiltonian that I want to think about. This says, hey, that's the shift. And this tells us what fraction of that shift we get in perturbation theory. And so for this particular one, gamma E times B, that's some tens of megahertz. For most of the things, it can be as large as delta. In fact, it can be larger than delta. But usually, it's small. So this piece here tends to be a few percent. And so we should see a shift, which is a few percent of that effect. Okay? Now then, we go and look at the Zeeman hyperfine interaction. So this was the Zeeman in second order. And of course, look, I should have said this. If the field is properly aligned along the z-axis, this term vanishes completely, right? So it's only that piece that we haven't aligned. And it may be that I'll show you, that you want to intentionally do this sometime. Okay, so now we look at the Zeeman hyperfine piece, which says that we're going to put the Zeeman interaction and the hyperfine interaction in these pieces, right? And then we're going to look at the Hermitian conjugate of that as well. And I'm not going to do all the math, but let's write down a few terms. It says that if I look at the energy shift for the MS equal 1 manifold, we get a term that looks, again, like gamma electron divided by delta. But it has a spin dependence to it. And each of the energies, each of these energy shifts calculated for the different electron spin manifolds will come in the same way. And so the second order term to this Zeeman hyperfine field is has first an electron spin dependence exactly like what we saw over there. Okay. But it has this dependence on it as well. So now we have the sigma dependence on it. So if I looked at the SZ, IZ, if I looked at this SZ squared piece, well, the shift's going to be small. We calculate it, we can put it up there. But if I look at this term, right, now we see that there's a shift that is independent of the MS quantum number. So even in the case where the MS quantum number is zero, we'll still have a splitting of the nuclear spin states. And here I've put a vector for the nuclear spin. But you can see what's going to happen. That here, we take this state. And now I've split it into two levels. So this is the Zeeman hyperfine piece. And when I split it into two levels, then we're going to get some splitting, which is going to go as gamma E B, let's just call it B perp again. Doesn't make any difference what the X and Y direction is, times the perp of the hyperfine interaction. So, okay, we're still sitting here at 1%, but now we're sitting here at 1% of some 100 megahertz, and the piece that this is competing with is this piece, the nuclear Zeeman interaction. Well, this thing is about 10 kilohertz on a good day. So now, if we're sitting down here in this energy level, the quantization axis is defined by this energy, this interaction for the nuclear spins. So I don't need to keep all that interaction. I can just say, I'll just define that direction as Z. It has nothing to do with any of the other Zs up there, right? But there's some preferred direction for the nuclear spin. And since we have to call it something, now we'll call it Z, okay? It won't be lined up with the external magnetic field. In fact, it would be it's a possible experiment, but it's a drag of an experiment to find exactly where it's aligned. But it's quantized somehow, and and since there's a preferred direction, I don't need to keep a vector here. All I need to do is keep the component along that preferred direction. Yeah? Now, if you like, I mean, I could have instead said, let's call it sigma principal axis system, right? I don't know which you like best, but anyways, there's a preferred direction. This is Z along that preferred direction. Now, of course, the same thing happens for all of these things, right? But already we have a big shift here. So that small shift doesn't make any difference. And these things, well, the quantization axis was defined right here. So the nuclear spin is quantized by the hyperfine interaction in those cases. Still has nothing to do with where the applied field is, right? And in fact, these two don't necessarily have any relationship between them. Yeah?
So can't it cause any trouble because with the X and Y direction you have chosen there?
So I'll come back to that in a second. But remember when I started writing this down this morning, I said, we'll just take a component of the applied field, we'll call it X,
yeah.
Right? Anything that's not there. And if I had done that, then I would only have one term here, okay? And you know, I had to be a little bit careful of my labels. But in fact, for the applied field, you know, there is only one angle in the system. The angle that separates the applied field from the zero quantum field splitting, from the zero field splitting, right? So that's the only angle in the problem. And that's why these things show up as effectively a magnitude of the field in the perpendicular direction. So I'm missing your question, I guess.
But that angle doesn't have anything to do with the nuclear spin direction, right?
That's right.
So we have another angle.
So yes, that you end up getting an effective angle for the nuclear spins, mm-hmm. right? So remember this morning when we were talking about just having one electron and one nuclear spin in the hyperfine interaction. And we saw that there was an effective angle between the nuclear, there were two quantization axes for the nuclear spin. One quantization axis when the electron was pointing up, and one quantization axis when the electron was pointing down. There's an angle between those. But that angle would turn out to be the arctan of the ratio of frequencies in the Hamiltonian. Right? It's not set by some geometry of a particular field. It's set by the ratio of the effective interactions along the x and z directions. So it gets to be a little bit more complicated. And that same complexity remains here. All right. Good. Now we can go through. We can go through the same analysis for the hyperfine interaction of once of the same nuclear spin. And what we'll find is that we'll get this piece back. Okay. The nuclear spin is going to drop out effectively because we'll end up with terms that always look like sigma squared on the nuclear spin. And of course, any poly squared goes to 1. Right. So the only other term that brings new physics is the hyperfine interaction between two different nuclear spins. So if we look at that, we just write down the MS equal 1 piece again. So now we have a hyperfine interaction. So let me write down the inner product for you. So it looks like, of course, so the primes just indicate that there's another spin, and add to this the Hermitian conjugate of that. And you can see what's going to happen is that we're going to get terms now that depend upon the cross terms of two nuclear spins. And of course, whereas sigma x squared is equal to the identity, sigma x on one spin times sigma x on the other spin does not, right? They're in different parts of a Hilbert space. And of course, any polys, so sigma prime always commutes with sigma, right? There are different identifiable spins, and so everything commutes. So we can go through some math. And I divided that by A energy. All right, so we can go through the math, and we'll get a term that looks like this. Now, when I expand this out, I'm going to end up, if I put a prime there, I'm going to end up with all the cross terms between sigma and sigma prime. And notice a nice thing that so far, let me just tell you a nice thing. You won't notice it yet. If I wrote down all the terms, we would end up once again, we always end up with the same electron spin piece. But now let's just keep this part. If we keep that part, just for our own purposes, what we effectively end up with is a dipole-dipole interaction, like the last term up there, for the nuclear spins. But now it has an amplitude that looks like it's proportional to the hyperfine interaction. And so we build into the system an effective dipole-dipole interaction. So this is an electron-mediated dipole-dipole interaction for the nuclear spins. In this piece of the system, the electron completely drops out. Okay, but it allows the spins to effectively talk to each other. And they communicate with each other very, very quickly. So, if we're thinking about coherent control, this is great. This leads to an effective nuclear-nuclear interaction. That is fast. If we're thinking about decoherence, this is a real drag because it leads to an effective nuclear-nuclear interaction that's really fast that can take information away from the electron spin and share it with distant nuclear spins over the ensemble. Okay, so, you know, it's good as long as you're the one that's controlling it. If you don't spend the energy to control it in, you know, nature always puts it there, then it's a drag. And these sorts of things are what makes quantum dot work so hard. Right? So if I'm trying to build a quantum computer out of quantum dots, we get exactly the same physics. But in the quantum dots, there tend to be a lot more nuclear spins. And so it's very, very fragile. We lose the information to the nuclear bath very quickly. Okay, now I'm not going to draw that up here because then I would have to add some more energy levels for all the different nuclear spins and it would get to be a drag. All right, good. Now, what have we learned? In the nuclear spin case, we've learned that we have reasonable control over the nuclear spins because there's big frequency separations. We see again that if we're operating in the MS equals zero manifold and or the MS equals plus or minus one manifold, that the physics is very different. And so we need to be careful there. And we see that almost all of the interactions come in mediated by some effective field. Usually experimentally, they're the residual part of the Zeeman field. It's not perfectly aligned with the NB axis. And so there's a real penalty of not getting that right. And I'd like to show you that. So the way I use these things is I like to go through the perturbation theory and understand this. But then I just go back to numerics, right? So if you look at the numerics, you have everything in front of you. And having the perturbation analysis, then the numerics will mean something. So let's see if we can't get this working. The answer is no. We can't get it working. Good. We can. Just the screen's off in the back of the room. Okay. So here what I've plotted is energy versus magnetic field strength. And this is the magnetic field strength along the Z direction at this moment. There's two sliders. One is a hyperfine frequency, which won't matter here. And the other, theta, is the angle that I'm going to rotate the field away from the principal axis system of the zero field splitting. So if I rotate, if I change the angle, what are you going to see as I change the angle between the principal axis system of the zero field splitting and the applied magnetic field? So I'm taking the applied magnetic field, I'm just rotating it away from the zero field splitting. What's that?
You'll see more energy levels.
I'm not going to allow myself to see more energy levels. I will in a second. Here I want to know just what happens to the shape of these three. We're only going to keep these three. You're trying to steal my thunder for the next slide. Okay, we do it. So as I change this, the first thing you see is that in fact we get an anti-crossing. Right? So I should have said, this of course is the MS equals zero, this is the minus one, that's the plus one of the three spins. Of course, plus one and minus one is degenerate at zero field. And as I rotate the spin away from zero, around, away from Z. As I rotate the magnetic field away from Z, then I get an anti-crossing here because I'm effectively introducing a sigma X operator, right? And so a sigma X operator will take me from being in zero to minus one, right? So there always has to be an operator that connects the energy levels. What happens as I continue rotating this? As I continue rotating it, the anti-crossing gets bigger, right? I'm making it stronger. Then it looks like the definitions of the energy levels is swapped. And that's a good thing, right? Because now we're looking at That's a field which is perpendicular to that direction. We're saying that the field dominates the physics here. And the zero field splitting dominates the physics just at that small range there, which is why we see the curvature of the system in there, right? Now I'm just going to, let me go back here. Let's go back to theta equals zero. And at this point here, right here, we really have a crossing at theta equals zero. And the hyperfine is equal to zero. I'm just going to expand that little piece right there. Okay. So there it is expanded, and we see the separations of the nuclear spins now. If I've blown this up, so we're looking at a very small range of fields, right where this crossing is. These two lines are, of course, still the ms equals minus 1. But now, for the nuclear two nuclear spin states, so you have one spin, one half nuclear spin, and these two are ms equals 0 for the two nuclear spin states. Okay. Now I'm going to put on the hyperfine. And when I do this, I'm going to make ax equal to ay. That's, in fact, the usual case in these systems. There's a symmetry that forces this thing to happen. Okay. So, yeah.
What is the vertical axis?
Energy.
So, joules?
Oh, damn if I know. Frequency units.
Okay.
Yeah. Just frequency. I don't have any equipment in my lab that has joules as one of the knobs. Frequency. Okay, we have four crossings. I introduce the hyperfine interaction. I'm going to take the first slider and make it non-zero. How many of those crossings will become anti-crossings under this form of the Hamiltonian? So you want to think about this as though the coupling Hamiltonian has that form. Okay. Anyone have a hazard a guess? Okay. You want to give a reason?
What's a guess? Well, if everything gets symmetric, then the crossing, the split itself should be 1 or 0.
So 3 is the opposite of what we find. So as we increase the hyperfine, we see only one splitting. I want you to remember that. Let me get any of this. see if I can draw this correctly. That these two lines were the MS equals zero lines, and these two are the MS equals minus one, right? Okay. And it looks a little bit weird. You know, you would think that that you could have 4, 2, but why one? And let's take this. If you expand this in raising and lowering operators, what do you get? I'll tell you. You get a term that looks like this. Okay? Given that, you ought to be able to make sense of this. Remember that the Hamiltonian, the coupling Hamiltonian, has to connect states across the anticrossing. Right? So the way to think about this is what's happening right here is that the coupling term is becoming dominant. And that splitting is given by the coupling term.
What happened to the other terms?
So you're saying, I've been filling the void with all this algebra. Isn't everything possible, right? And no, everything isn't possible. It's amazing. You would think it should be. We've set the field to a particular value to see this, right? And so what that means is that this splitting here now competes with that. Okay, so that's, we've removed a lot of the parameters for that reason. And then I've set this symmetry. And so in fact, there isn't any other terms left. All right, so everything's defined. Okay. We can work this out. If I go, let's just go from bottom to top. If I go from MS equals zero to MS equals minus one, S better be? S minus. Thank you. So we have that piece there. Therefore, we know that the change in states or the nuclear spins have to correspond to sigma plus, right? So this must be the minus 1/2 to plus 1/2 transition of the nuclear spins, right? And so therefore, this thing must be plus 1/2. That one must be minus 1/2. Good. Now then, why don't I have an anticrossing here?
It's S minus is just, we have only
right. So it would have to, I would have to have, if I was going to have an anticrossing here, I would need a term that would look like S minus sigma minus, right? I don't have that. So in fact, there's only this one anticrossing. And if I had a crossing here or here, well, then I would need a term that would look like S, like sigma X, right? So there can't be a crossing there because it's effectively a nuclear spin crossing. Yeah. All right. So, what happens when I change the angle of the field, however? Well, if I change the angle of the field, then certainly I get these terms that are sigma X and SX, right? Because the Zeeman interaction comes in with this. Right? So if I change the angle of the field, then I get all of these terms. I get, for the electron spin, I get SX. And for the nuclear spin, I get sigma X. And it comes in here. This is a big field already. So if I change theta by just a little bit,
so we'll get two crossing.
Everything goes right off the screen. All right. We get all the crossings. Okay. So let me see if I can make that. You start off by getting these two crossings. And then as I make it a little bit bigger, I'm going to get this crossing too. Come on. There. And make it a little bit bigger still. Okay. And so you get all the range of anti-crossings in this. Good. So now, what do we know? We know that we can control the system. We can use it to characterize magnetic fields. We notice it's pretty sensitive to the applied magnetic field, but it's incredibly sensitive to the direction of the applied magnetic field. And so if you want to use this as a sensor, what you'd like to do is to be able to modulate the direction of the field that the spin sees as a way of probing some aspect of the environment. We also see that it's very sensitive to hyperfine interactions. So if we wanted to use this to study a nuclear spin, we shouldn't study a nuclear spin as an ensemble of nuclear spins, but we should put the NV close enough that it actually sees a resolved nuclear spin. It sees a single nuclear spin. And many groups, we included, are trying to do that. So to combine all of the properties of an NV system with some scanning probe microscope. And Amir Yacobi at Harvard has succeeded in some of those things. Okay, not that detecting a single spin. That will wait for one of you people to be a graduate student. And the same physics, of course, shows us the limitations of control when we look at the other C13 spins in the diamond system. Okay. But the piece I wanted you to take out of this, and I know it's a bit too much math to see the whole thing, is first that you can go through, even in this complicated, even in this simple system, things get complicated. Even in this complicated system, you can go through the whole thing. And if you have some time to write it down yourself, you can understand it all. And if you understand it at the level of the perturbation theory, then you can go back to the numerics and understand what the numerics are telling you directly. Okay? All right, so I want to stop with the NVs here. And tomorrow what I'd like to do is to turn our attention to looking at superconducting systems. So I want to tell you how you can use superconducting systems to design any Hamiltonian you like. And therefore, you can make any effective quantum system that you would like to study. And it's, conceptually anyways, amazingly simple. And in practice, it's getting easier and easier. So it's something that many groups can successfully do. Okay, so we'll do that. Now I know that there's a wealth of applications in these NB systems, and there's a lot of neat physics to explore. There isn't much time to do it all. I'll just show you one example, and then we'll stop. If I take and apply a pi pulse, then we've seen that a pi pulse should refocus the interaction. And as long as the same thing's happening here and here, I should get an echo. Everything should come back together. Now, apply a pi pulse on the electron spin. If I apply a pi pulse on the electron spin, it's going to take me from the MS equals zero manifold to the plus or minus manifold, depending upon how I design it. And then if I look at the nuclear spin, well, the nuclear spin is doing something incredibly different in both of those manifolds. And so we don't see an echo in general. So if I plotted this echo intensity versus tau, we see that it comes crashing down, does some crazy stuff, and then some time later, we get the revival. And this is the time tau, right? So I'm just doing one experiment, and I'm just changing the time. And normally what we would expect is we would expect to see an exponential decay for all of these points. But here, we see just that we lose coherence and that we recover coherence at periodic, this is periodic, at periodic magic times, which annoys me. In the paper is referred to as magic. And there's nothing magic about it. What's going on? Any ideas? Well, you can see what happens. That when you give this pi pulse, you go from one set of evolution to another set of evolution. And so imagine that I said that you're going to rotate about this axis for some time, and then you're going to rotate about this oblique axis over here for some time. And I want to see that I end up in the same place. Well, the only way that's going to work is if I rotate by 2 pi or multiples of 2 pi about this one. And so these times have to be chosen so that this interaction strength times tau is a multiple of 2 pi. And then you see these things. Now, there's lots of other ways you could have done this experiment. But even as you try to do something as simple as apply one pulse, already there's complicated dynamics. But if you keep all the physics, all the spin physics, you know, it's not hard to figure out what's going on. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop there.